We think that higher inflation will likely continue in the coming months before returning to pre-pandemic levels by mid-2022.
Inflation rates have not been much of a concern for decades. Should they be now?
Sharply rising housing prices and prolonged input supply shortages in both advanced and developing economies, and continued food price pressures and currency depreciations in emerging markets could keep inflation elevated for longer. My name is Prachi Mishra. I'm an advisor in the research department at the International Monetary Fund.
And welcome to this IMF podcast. Today, an analytical chapter in the World Economic Outlook explores the inflation landscape and finds we're in uncharted territory. Prachi Mishra is a lead author of the research. So how does the inflation that we're seeing now compare to what we saw in the early 70s, which really is the last time we saw any significant inflation that we needed to worry about, and what economists described back then as stagflation?
Bruce, if you look at a 101 macro textbook, stagflation is an adverse shift in the aggregate supply curve that lowers output and raises prices. And a popular view is that the exogenous oil price shocks in the early 1970s, as you mentioned, were primarily responsible for the stagflation then. I should say that the pandemic crisis is very different. When the pandemic hit, it was a combination of an adverse demand shock. People were indoors, they were not buying, which reduced prices, as well as an adverse supply shock, because there were supply shortages which raised prices. Hence, the effect on prices a priori was not clear. If you look at the recovery phase we are in now, on the other hand, you have demand rising as people are actually going back to spending due to accumulated savings, pent-up demand, etc. But at the same time, some of the supply disruptions continue. So this is again a combination of shifts in demand and supply, but both pointing towards greater price pressures, unlike the early phases of the pandemic. So overall, what we are experiencing now is truly unprecedented.
So what's the forecast? I mean, what does this latest World Economic Outlook tell us about what to expect in terms of inflation?
So based on the findings in the chapter on inflation, inflation is expected to revert to pre-pandemic levels by mid-2022. For advanced economies, headline inflation will peak in the fall of 2021 and will decline to around 2% by mid-2022. The outlook for emerging economies similarly shows headline inflation declining to about 4% after a peak of 6.8% this fall, with risks tilted to the upside for both advanced and emerging markets over the medium term. But let me stress two things. First, that these are averages. A key feature of the outlook is the significant cross-country heterogeneity across advanced and emerging economies, and even within advanced economies. So while the United States drives the strong inflation dynamics in advanced economies in the short term, with near-term risks tilted to the upside, underlying inflation dynamics in the euro area and Japan, in contrast, remain quite weak. And the second thing, Bruce, I should stress is there's considerable uncertainty that surrounds these forecasts, given the uncharted nature of the recovery we are in.
And so how important are forecasts when it comes to inflation? You know, in this analysis, you talk a lot about the danger of unhinged expectations and self-fulfilling inflation spirals. To what extent does forecasting influence consumer actions?
So this is a very important point. Inflation expectations are crucial to understanding the inflation process. And a key concern, as you mentioned, is identifying the conditions that could cause recent inflation spikes to persist, leading to unanchored expectations and self-fulfilling inflation spirals. The good news for the policymakers is that long-term inflation expectations so far remain well anchored, but there's still disagreement about how enduring will these expectations be. And here, let me say that ultimately, central bank policy credibility and price expectations are very difficult to precisely define. And any complete assessment of anchoring cannot be decided entirely based on relationships and historical data. And when expectations do become de-anchored, inflation can quickly take off and be very costly to rein back in. Therefore, I must stress that this is truly challenging times for policymakers. And we actually emphasize in the chapter is that policymakers must be ready to act and, more importantly, ensure that sound monetary frameworks are in place, including triggers that require action. And such triggers, just to give you examples, could comprise early signs of de-anchoring of inflation expectations from forward-looking surveys or unsustainable fiscal and current accounts or sharp movements in the exchange rate.
So just for us non-economists out there, what is or how does the self-fulfilling inflation spiral work?
So Bruce, the way self-fulfilling inflation spiral work is you have a rise in inflation, which you think is transitory, but that feeds into expectations. People start because they see the price increases, which are transitory, and then they expect future prices to go up. And what would you do if you're a consumer? If you're expecting future prices to go up, you actually go and purchase now. And so there's higher demand and higher prices. So expectations start, you know, feeding into actual price increases. So that's what it is. You expect prices to be high. And in a self-fulfilling sense, actual prices tend to increase because, you know, when you expect prices to be high, you just go and rush and start to buy stuff. And you actually end up increasing prices today just from expectation of future increase in prices.
I see. So you talk about how the fiscal support that's been happening throughout the pandemic has had an impact on inflation expectations. And so what is the relationship between those two things, fiscal support and inflation?
Here, Bruce, I should say, as I already said before, that inflation expectations during the pandemic have actually been well anchored so far. If we look at market-based measures, for example, of long-term expectations known as break-evens, which are drawn from government bonds and countries for which we have data, so far things look okay. And in fact, our analysis of daily monetary and fiscal announcements reveals no evidence of de-anchoring in response to these exceptionally large policy responses we've seen during the pandemic, which you mentioned. I have to stress that uncertainty around the outlook remains. Therefore, it's important to look at past episodes and see what triggered these unhinging of expectations in the past. And we do find that inflation accelerations in the past were also preceded by an upsurge in fiscal and current account deficits in emerging markets. And in particular, long-term expenditure commitments could be associated with unhinged expectations. And these underscore the importance of credible medium-term fiscal frameworks in keeping expectations anchored.
So everyone has experienced going into a store these days and finding shelves empty of the oddest things and stuff online that isn't available. And we hear a lot about microchip shortages, for example, that have an impact on manufacturing. The report points to these prolonged supply chain disruptions as a complicating factor in terms of inflation. What are the supply shortages that you worry about most, and how are they affecting the outlook?
So indeed, input shortages and supply chain disruptions have been an important factor, as you point out, of the rise in inflation we've seen since early this year. That said, two things I would mention here. What we do in the chapter on inflation is a case study of the semiconductor industry in the United States. And still that points to a modest increase in overall inflation from potential doubling of semiconductor input prices. But the important complex interlinkages, for example, it's possible that, you know, the shortage in semiconductor chips may not directly translate to higher prices, but it could lead to lower output of products that rely on chips as inputs, for example, cars, which in turn could lead to higher prices for these goods or their substitutes. Therefore, the issue is, fairly complicated. Second, I should add that, you know, one part of analysis, big part of analysis is on sectoral shocks. And some of the forecasts which I mentioned, which is the so-called baseline, you know, despite the disruptions we've seen so far, sectoral price dispersion still remains muted compared to historical standards. And that drives our baseline forecast of inflation returning to pre-pandemic levels by mid-2022. But as, you know, we highlight in the chapter, that risks remain. And what if supply disruptions get more prolonged or start feeding into inflation expectations reading? That could lead to significantly higher inflation than predicted in our so-called baseline or the mean forecast.
And so given there are no quick fixes for much of those supply bottlenecks, what will it take and how long might it take for supply and demand to rebalance and we can stop worrying about inflation again?
Look, case studies we analyze in the chapter demonstrate that, you know, while strong policy action was often successful in bringing down inflation and inflation expectations, sound and credible communication played a very crucial role in keeping expectations anchored. And let me give you, for example, a case study we do in the chapter on a large emerging market, which is India, back in 2013. Mm-hmm. Inflation was in double digits and rupee was under pressure. Two things really stood out. One was a pledge to restore confidence and a commitment to make the central bank more transparent and predictable. And the central bank's success on this front actually opened up the space to pursue other objectives without disturbing inflation expectations. With this, you know, in terms of our forecasts, as I already mentioned before, just to reiterate, we think that higher inflation will likely continue in the coming months before returning to pre-pandemic levels by mid-2022. So again, you know, let me stress that risks of an acceleration do remain. Hence, it's very important that policymakers be on the lookout and be prepared to act, especially if some of the risks we highlight in this chapter should materialize at the same time. You know, prolonged supply disruptions, rising commodity and housing prices, permanent and unfunded fiscal commitments, and a de-anchoring of expectations, a perfect storm scenario, as you can call it.
Prachi Mishra, advisor in the research department at the IMF and co-author of the analytical chapter on inflation in the latest World Economic Outlook that will be published next week. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Bruce.
You can read all the analytical chapters in the World Economic Outlook at imf.org/WEO. And we'll have another podcast on the WEO, as it's known, with IMF Chief Economist Geeta Gopinath on Tuesday, October 12th, when the latest global forecasts are released. Look for it wherever you listen to your podcasts and follow us on Twitter at @IMF_podcast to make sure you don't miss it. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.